Hi, I'm. Can everybody hear okay? I'm Greg Conti, and this is Eric Dean. We're both security researchers at the United States Military Academy at West Point. And any good talk should begin with a Dan Kaminsky quote. So that's where we're coming from here. Talk louder. Okay, so I have to talk louder. So I hope to do several things in the talk today. The key being to convince you that it's possible to get beyond like the general hex editor that we use. It's the Swiss Army knife of analyzing binary data, and we can do better than that. So we're going to try and convince you that we can go two, perhaps three orders of magnitude more than what you can see using a traditional hex editor. Both Eric and I are here as free citizens and not representatives of the United States government. This is where they send people who don't put the slide up, by the way. But first, I thought it'd be fun to just have a little fashion statement as we get started. Well, first a question. How many of you have spent 10 hours or more of your life in using a hex editor? Okay. How many of you have one of these? Binary watches? Anybody have a binary watch on? That's good for a door prize. No? And ladies, look for ladies and audience, there are versions available for you too. So the key idea is that hex editors have a very small textual window. And in the files you're trying to look at, the data you're trying to look at, it's getting larger and larger. And it's not keeping up. So trying to work around that problem and find insightful ways to move beyond that. So what we're doing is kind of showing you what else is out there in that space, some ideas, different techniques for visualizing data, two systems that we're releasing today, and then we'll put them through their paces for you. So these are the two tools, and we're going to cover each in turn. And they're both, I'd call them research prototypes. They're reasonably solid, but you're going to run into issues because they're research prototypes or proof of concept. But we're looking for feedback too. So just, it's useful to think about just binary data in general as we move forward. So if you think of binary data just as a group of zeros and ones, it could exist one typical way. It's really dependent, those zeros and ones depend on the context in which they're used and acted upon. So one common way is a file. So you have this chunk of binary data, and it's interpreted either as a data file, which is operated on by another application, or as an executable file that's executed by the operating system. And then there's special cases, say you've dumped core memory, things like that. And you could also consider files loosely as data at rest. But you also have large chunks of zeros and ones in memory, process memory, caches, variety of different places, and network packets. You can consider these data in motion, where network packets are going from point A to point B, and memory is often changing very rapidly in time. So just trying to get our arms around the problem and what's been done, what hasn't been done, where is there a need, we came up with this matrix of grid of four quadrants. The idea is that certain tools are general purpose. You can throw just about anything at them. And there's others that are precise applications. And we'll go through them quickly. So the general purpose tools, things like hex editors, grep and diff, strings, those are kind of the tools of the trade. But I'd argue that they're lower insight. I have 011, the hex editor, at the higher end because it has the ability to incorporate templates and knowledge about file format. So it's kind of pushing up on the insight level. And just an example of strings, grep and diff. I mean, you can throw them at very large files, but then you become overwhelmed sometimes with the output they provide. And then a key point I want to make clear is that we're not trying to say we need to replace the hex editor. I think hex editors are very good, and I think they'd make a great foundation to build upon with other interaction techniques like we're going to show you later today. For example, I mean, some of the current hex editors allow you to convert, look at values, byte values in different formats. They have a wide range of different tools and textual techniques built in. And also, they readily present metadata and the like. So they're highly evolved. Let's see, and the idea, though, is can we push beyond this foundation? What I'm not addressing today is the idea of executables. The reverse engineering community is very active, and there's some wonderful tools, which we'll cover in a second, that focus on reverse engineering of executable files. We're looking at the general purpose case of you have large files, perhaps very large files, and how you can find insight into them. So in the executable arena, this is circa 2005, came out of F-Secure, and it's the bagel virus. And what they did is a 3D animation so you could see the execution structure of the bagel virus. And then you've seen kind of that general approach come out, and this is IDA version 5.1, where they have a global navigator glider, and it's color-coded to tell different regions within the file, a big picture overview graph, and then a more detailed view graph. So you see these starting to emerge in today's tool sets, as well as the well-regarded tools by Zynamics, BinDiff, and BinNavi, same thing. They both allow you to see how a file is structured. But I think there's a gap in the general purpose category. Reverse engineering executables, I think, is well covered, but the general purpose category, I think there's room for improvement, and hence the talk. The space isn't altogether empty, though. This is circa 1999, NWDIFF, and the idea was it allowed you to look inside a file and compare two files side by side in a variety of different ways. I was only able to find like an early prototype. I don't think it evolved much beyond this, but the idea was interesting. And for those of you who are familiar with Dan Kaminsky's work using dot plots, we'll take a look at that later on in the talk as well. So, and it's also useful to think of files. There's really two basic situations. There's a context-independent level where you're not bringing in additional information. So there's a set of tools and techniques you can use when you don't really know much about the file itself. And then there's a context-specific level when you do know something about the file, where you can bring in external information, where you have the specification for a given file format, and you can bring that in and inform what you're doing. What we're focusing on today is, again, the general purpose case, the context-independent level. So the idea, this is what's the shaded region is the hex editor. This is today's hex editor. There's a core. It's well-refined. The better ones can handle large files. But ultimately, you're constrained to the canonical hex ASCII view. So what we're working on is the idea of creating a framework where you can include the traditional textual utilities. And hex editors have done that to a degree. But more importantly, in creating graphical displays that are useful and interesting. And even beyond that, your time is valuable. When you're at Black Hat, it may seem that everybody's a computer security expert, but when you leave, you find out that's not the case. And there's not that many analysts on the planet. So the idea of conserving your time and allowing your insights, help you find insights better and faster so they can be pushed off to machine processors. I see visualization as a broker that helps you find insight, and once you've found it, you shouldn't have to do it again. That's, I think, the direction that this stuff needs to go. And what we'll talk about at the end for future directions is the idea of machine-assisted mapping, finding regions of interest, helping guide you to those regions. Even if the machine can't exactly identify it, it might be able to point you in intelligent directions. Particularly when you're talking manually exploring a 2 gigabyte file, for example, machine assistance might be helpful. So there are many things that a visualization-enhanced hex editor tool could do. We're going to cover two today, the idea of locating embedded objects within large binary files, and also analyzing unknown/undocumented file formats, and that leads to things like file fuzzing and a variety of other interesting areas. So the goals we came up with is we want to handle large files. So when you think of a hex editor, is 10K reasonable in a hex editor? So raise your hands. How many people think 1 meg is reasonable in a hex editor to manually inspect? Okay, I don't see really any hands. So what I hope to prove to you today that we're going to be looking at a 40 meg file, and I've pushed it up to 300 megs, that you can rapidly scan through them and find interesting regions and then go from there. And it's also, if you do it right, it can be fun. It doesn't have to suck, which is important. And anytime you see something that's both art and science, that's often a prime opportunity to use visualization. So we're going to present two approaches, both research prototypes. The first is VisBin. It was written in C Sharp using Visual Studio 2008 and Dangly Bytes using C Sharp Visual Studio 2005. So with that, this is Eric.
So like Greg said, this is a research prototype, also known as the Google Rolling Beta, which never actually gets out of beta, but everybody uses it anyway. So VisBin, our first approach was to try to incorporate the given hex and ASCII displays as you'd find in normal hex editors. Just an easy, simple search, search for hex strings and ASCII strings, just because it's kind of cool. And some different graphical displays, including the byte plot, the byte frequency, and entropy plots. It also includes our a way of handling the larger files. We had to create a custom memory management type solution because the .NET framework didn't really handle it too well. And it also features a plug-and-play architecture. So if you want to write your own visualizations, they're very easy to include. Just drop them in and away you go. So the VisBin interface has the detail view, which is an offset into the file, so basically a chunk of the file, and this is using our memory management or offset method. It's got an overview of the file, so just basically does a complete sweep over the file, taking a sampling. Navigation through that memory management table, and I'll cover that in a few slides. We also tried to incorporate the file utility like in Linux, so it automatically tries to find and identify embedded files using that magic file definitions, and that's still under development. We're working on that. And an easy way of just toggling between the different visualizations. So the problem that I mentioned was the memory management with .NET and the framework. For some reason, it wouldn't let us create images any larger than 65x535 pixels, either height or width. And I found out after hours of Googling and whatnot that it's due to some undocumented constructor dependency. And thanks, Microsoft. That hours of my life I'll never get back. So our solution was basically creating like an offset table, kind of like Excel, and each cell would have a start and an end offset into the file that we're looking at. And when I say file, in this case we're looking at files, it could be any binary blob. So the first visualization that we included was the byte plot, which basically just takes a binary blob and plots each byte left to right, top to bottom, through the new image, and in this case, it's coloring high-valued bytes at a lighter color and lower-value bytes at a darker color, but that's just this example. So we apply different color coding techniques as well. So we have an ASCII-enhanced color coding byte plot, an entropy plot, and byte frequency plot as well. So here we're looking at the Explorer executable, always a good time. And this is using the ASCII enhanced byte plot. So we tried to take all the printable ASCII and kind of enhance their visibility while fading anything that wasn't printable ASCII into the background. And that just allows for easy, string identification, things like that. So this is the actual detail view. And then you can, once you find something kind of cool that you want to look at in more detail, you just bring up the hex to ASCII conversion display and try to identify what you're looking at. Sometimes the ASCII enhanced view just kind of gives you what looks like garbage or just kind of random data. And in that case, you can actually use the entropy display, which kind of tries to find areas of changes between high entropy and low entropy in a file. And then as we can see here, the high entropy is red and low entropy is blue. And sometimes those areas are indicative of something you may want to look at or something cool embedded in a file. And then it's also got the entropy or the byte frequency display. So here on the left, you can see Explorer and Command, both commonly found in Windows. And as you can see, the byte frequency kind of brings out interesting structures, but the structures are different in both files. But after running them through the UPX packer, you can see that there are actually two structures emerge that are kind of similar in both. And that's just a closer look at it.
Oftentimes, it's the structure contained within the file that would, that's what you want to take a look at. I mean, a large compressed region may not be that interesting, but if you can look at a large file, find the compress or find the deviations from that, the structure could be interesting.
So we'll, let's actually take a look, because, you're probably sitting there going, okay, cool, color pictures, woo. But we'll take a look to see if we can actually see how this is applicable to maybe hidden messages in a file. And hopefully the gyrations we had to do to get this AV setup to work won't hose it too badly. So here's the VisBin application. And we'll just load in an MP3, if I can find it.
So this was inspired by Johnny Long, who did, I think it was his Death of a Thousand Cuts talk, where he was showing different places you could hide messages. And so using that technique, basically you can open a hex editor, edit an MP3, and when you play back the MP3, it's basically inaudible. You can't hear it, as long as the message isn't too large. But finding the message is what Eric's showing here.
So we load that in. Looks like kind of garbage, or as something you'd expect to see from a compressed file or an encrypted file or some kind of obfuscated file. But if we navigate through it, get this area right here that doesn't really look like anything in the surrounding area. So, and I apologize if this is kind of gefurkled. And it is. The screen resolution is supposed to be, it works better if you have more screen space. So, we'll see, you really can't. Well, here, I'll go to the backup emergency slides and show you what it should look like with a better screen resolution. So, again, here's the file. We identify an interesting region that we want to look at. We load it up in the hex view, and you can actually see there's a message here, part of the Fourth Amendment, which is interesting given the latest DHS stuff that's going on where they just take your laptop forever. So the stuff we want to continue working on is finishing the magic file identification piece, maybe change the memory model from a table to an array or a list, just because it's not quite user intuitive using the table. And then also want to add some nice navigation through the overview image, as well as being able to extract stuff out of the detailed view, so just highlight and extract to another file or something like that. And now I will turn this back over to Greg and Dangly Bytes.
Is anybody from England? Can anyone tell me what Dangly Bits means? Okay, it's a PG-13 way of male body parts, I guess. It's what you see when someone's pants are down. So I decided to go with Dangly Bytes because with the right windows, you can look inside files, and oftentimes the protocol designer, the programmer didn't think that someone would be looking at their file instead of analyzing it in a different way. So perhaps you could find someone with their pants down. That was the idea. You got to come up with a good name. So the idea with Dangly Bytes was a large number of windows, all coordinated. So as you go through and navigate through the file, they'll all update at the same time, so you can compare and contrast different views. So right now, I'll go ahead and walk through the views and then kind of do a little rolling demo. Started off with just your traditional views. On the left is the canonical hex ASCII view. And on the right is strings, so it runs strings as a background thread on the file, finds locations of strings. I did it at one possible extension would be to allow fine-tuning of strings, but right now it just uses kind of a default setting. But the idea is you double-click one of the strings, every window in the display jumps to that location. This next view was inspired by Mikhail Zalewski. who you may have seen either in Silence in the Wire or his papers before, did work with strange attractors and TCP/IP sequence number analysis. And the idea being, if you plot sequence numbers, they're supposed to be random. If you plot them and you see structure, that's bad. So what he did is took a large number of hardware products and posted plots of what their sequence number generator output looked like. And on the left is an example of a very bad one, lots of structure. And on the right is a diffuse cloud. And generally, that's a good thing. So, and that's kind of a recurring theme. Structure tells you one thing. Lack of structure tells you another. So the way he... our variation, we're doing it in 2D. So if you imagine a sequence of bytes, and you take the first byte and the second byte, they have those byte values. I just chose black hat, but say the first two byte values were 98 and 108. You plot a pixel at position 98, 108. Then you take the next pair, LA, and that equates to byte values 108 and 97. And you plot a pixel at 108, 97. And you go through the file. So what you're doing is plotting the digraphs, essentially. You're plotting digraphs in the file, and it'll allow you to see the relationship, what one value, whether it predicts another value. That will show in the display. So the basic idea is a 256 by 256 rectangle, where you're plotting these values. And a design decision was, well, how far out into the file do you go? If you do the entire file, that tells you one thing. So I chose arbitrarily a 5,000 byte sliding window, so you can kind of see a local region. And these are just different variations of what you can see. So if something's UU encoded, and if you think about UU encoding, that's the idea is it's a way to convert binary files and using a reduced alphabet. So this is what you see, the structure, just zooming in. And the idea here is if you, with a little bit of practice and perhaps a collaborative effort, you can create little screenshots of a library of what different things look like. So this is UU encoding. HTML, you'd expect a different structure, and that's what you see. So you think about the structure of an HTML document. Compression, a star field. Theoretically, our compression slash encryption, what you usually see is one byte should be independent of the next byte. A .txt file, and that's a recurring theme because upper and lowercase characters show in a certain way. And then you'll see interesting things as you go through the file, animations, where things will move, and incrementing values will slide across the screen. And also, like that, you'll see them move, as well as constrained pairs of values. So the idea is, particularly when you're exploring something new or unfamiliar, you have a large file you're just trying to get your head around, each different windows tell you different things. So you pull up the sets of windows that you believe will be most useful to you. And even when structure isn't immediately evident, it may still be there. And again, when you're using hex or just strings or just some basic tools, this is all invisible. You don't know this is going on. And just a zoom of the constrained pairs. I also have a bit plot, which does the same thing as the byte plot, except it's just one bit per pixel. And let me do a quick demo. Hold on. So what I'm going to do is open a Word document, and it's about a 10 meg Word file. Any experts on Word in here? Okay. So this is a Word document with a large text region, with a good bit of text. It's about 25 pages and a large number of embedded images and embedded hyperlinks. So opening up the byte plot view. And then you open up, the idea of interconnected, like each one updates the other. You can open a text view. And in the Word document, I know from experience by opening a number of these, that this region at the top, the dark region here, I think you can see, that's where Word puts text. So that's where the text region appears, and you click on it, and it shows the text in the detail view. Then more structure of note. And what this allows you to do then is open a file, find regions that are closely identical to each other, so you can hop from one of these regions. And there's only about, I don't know, about 8 different regions in here, and it's a 10 meg file. So you hop to those 8 regions, do a quick check, and you can see, you can get a quick overview of the file. So I had a friend when I put together a packet visualization tool called Rumint and built it around a VCR metaphor. So a friend of mine gave me a hard time and said, well, what are you going to do with this? Put a VCR on it? And I said, yes, asshole, I am. So I hadn't planned till he said that, but it actually turned out to be useful. We'll see if it works. Okay. The idea, and this is a problem ran into with this given chipset or something. Your mileage may vary, but normally this is a smooth scroll on the machines I tested on before. But the idea is you hit play and it allows you to scroll through the display. And what you can do then is say, okay, here's the word you've quickly identified and said, this is the text region. Then there's another region of interest with these gradients. And then there's this large white noise region. And you can scroll through the file. Now we're going, you know, 10 meg file, we're scrolling through rapidly. And if you scroll through, you see things like the occasional black line appear. And it turns out, if you click on that black line, you'll see PNG header information. So what that's telling you is that large compressed region, you can see the individual breaks between images in the file. And again, it's all about speed. You know, what we're doing is the 10 meg file, and we're scrolling through it visually. And then there you go. And then you notice at the end, another interesting region. So from there, it can guide your insight. Looking at it with the other view we had, that attractor view. So as we go through the text region, and then scroll forward, so you see the ASCII text characters, and then it turns into a star field. And that allows you to confirm maybe there's something there that you don't see in the byte plot view. And then when you get to the end, you see different structures appear. So again, it's a way to confirm or deny. And let me state that we're at 1024 by 768, which is definitely not the way to go. A 24-inch monitor or something like that is a much more pleasurable experience. So this is just a screenshot in case the tool blew up. Now, another approach, and again, it's the coordinated windows. So on the left is the byte plot view you've seen, and on the right is a byte presence view. And what that means is each row equates to one row on the byte plot equals one row on the byte presence. So if you've got, such as here, you have values in there's 256 columns, and if a byte, say a byte 42 appeared in that line, column 42 will be illuminated. If a byte, if printable ASCII showed up, you'd see things like from 32 up to 127, you'd see bars appear for that region. I'll show you what I mean. So you notice at the top, so these each row equates is equivalent, and and then here you see a region of heavy density of printable ASCII characters, which helps confirm your hypothesis that it's text, and it also lets you scan quickly through and see if something deviates, which again might be an area to explore. In that region that follows, there's gradients, and when you see diagonal lines in this, if they're down and to the right, that's an increasing value. So you can see that when values increase, you'll see diagonal lines. And then when you see a very full line, typically almost a solid line, what that tells you usually is that almost every byte value is used, And typically that means compression or encryption. So again, quick scan, quick check. And you can confirm with this byte presence view and the attractor view. And then you can kind of scroll through and go, okay. But again, notice those black lines appear here as well. So those might be areas that you want to explore at that given offset. Also did a red-green-blue plot. So the idea is trying to squeeze as much information onto the screen in a meaningful way. And what this allows you to do is it takes the first three bytes. And the first value here is 255. That becomes the red value. The 108 becomes the green value. And 0 becomes the blue value. So what you're doing is plotting that pixel with that tuple of three values and so on. And allows you then to condense three times as much information in the file. In a variant of that, let's see. So it makes it smaller. One thing that we're exploring, if I can, is the idea of changing the width, too, because if you change the width, patterns can emerge. Because when you look at, right now the default size is 640 by 480 on the little windows. That if you do the slider, you'll see structures and patterns merge as well. So what does this mean? It means that I believe that the conclusion is that text, useful for a detailed view, but it is valuable to be able to look at the big picture. The byte view, on a 19-inch monitor with hex, roughly, back of the envelope, you can see about 4.4K kilobytes. On using the byte view, you can see 1.3 megabytes, which is a 300 times gain. So you're able to see 300 times more information at the same time. Different type of information, it means different things, but still I think that gain is valuable. And if you go to the red, green, blue mode, that gives you a gain of 900. So a couple of orders of magnitude. Some of you may be familiar with Dan Kaminsky's work. We also plugged in an interactive dot plot view, which I'll show in a second. I'll really point you toward the paper behind it by Jonathan Helfman's dot plot patterns, and also Dan's talks at the Chaos Computer Conference and the Black Hat 2006. But the basic idea is it allows you to see self-similarity in large sequences of values. The Helfman did it with words. So if you took to be or not to be and plotted it on the horizontal and vertical axis, every time that value appeared at the same place, like 2, every time it appeared, you put a pixel in that location. And what you were able to see are things like this. If values repeated, you'd see squares. If sequences of values repeated, you'd see diagonals. If there were palindromes, things forward and backwards, they'd appear as crosses. And then if you saw density variations, you'd see, or if it was solid A's or solid single value, it'd be a dense A. If you see a diffuse A or a diffuse square, then that means there's a repeating character with something else in between. And the idea here is that any one of these windows doesn't cure cancer. But if you put them all together, open up the set that you think works best for you, and you're going to see things. And I have some examples, motivate you down the road. One difference with what Dan did, and this is my recollection, is he basically took the whole file. And when you take a whole file and you plot it on X and Y, you've got an order n squared problem. So you get giant algorithm, you've got giant files. So what I did, I wanted to make this interactive. So what I did is a sliding 500 by 500 region. So you can that's an order n solution, and that's a speed the computer can keep up with. Just a couple of quick examples of what English text looks like. Bitmaps often have gradients, and that's example of bitmaps. And then compressed audio again, lack of structure. A couple more things I added for fun, just to explore, was the idea of tag clouds. You may have encountered them. Did it with, you take the bytes in the file, and then you change, and you print out the ones that are in the file, and then you change their size based on the frequency. So you can see at a glance the distribution of bytes in the file. which is of marginal value, but where I've found use is to determine the alphabet in use. Like what bytes were used in this file at all. Say you're using UU encoding or something, it tells you what values were used that could be of interest. And also a rolling byte frequency display. So as you go through, you can see as the byte values change. So let me just finish the demo. So I showed you the RGB dot plots. So the dot plot view, God. Big monitor. So you can scroll through the file and see regions. And sometimes, even in the compressed regions, structural emerge in the dot plot view. So you can slide through and see, you basically interact in what Dan had proposed and found very useful insight in. Now you can explore interactively. And the same thing with byte frequency. So you can go through the file and kind of see how the byte frequency changes in the file. All right. So here's just some examples, things that we found useful. The first, this is the Army's gone to the .xfdl Pure Edge system for its paperwork. And when you look at the file at first glance, you don't really see too much structure. But, and this, again, could contrast this to what you could do, what your other tools could do, like a hex header or something like that. Well, when you look at in the strange attractor view, what you see is there's very distinct patterns in there, and you can also see using the cloud view that you can see what values were used, so you know alphabet. So there's something more there than meets the eye. And by using the byte presence view, you can scroll through the file rapidly and either confirm or deny that that set of values was used all the way consistently through the file, so you can scan through it quickly. Taking a look at encryption is another way. So this is a Word document, and how many people knew that there's actually XOR as an available encryption option in Word? Normally there's a default encryption, then there's advanced encryption, and it lists about 20 different techniques. So for fun, I tried XOR just to see what it looked like. And lo and behold, I think there's some insights, and it'd be of value just to know what XOR text looks like. And the idea here is after you've seen these things once, maybe you have a poster on the wall of what different things look like. If you're trying to train somebody new in the office or whatever, they could know what these signatures look like. So the two red squares, let's go back. The two red squares, the top region is the text we saw, and the bottom region is the XORed text. So it's a distinct visual signature. And then when you compare the byte presence view, at the top, you see that here, you see the heavy printable ASCII range. And in the bottom, you see what the inverse looks like, what XORed looks like. You can see that even the values that were incrementing in the top file are now the slope has changed and they're decrementing. And just a distinct difference between what the printable ASCII range and then what XORed printable ASCII looks like when you're looking at digraphs. And that's just zooming in on the XORed digraph because notice the little blocks in there. I'll cover that again later because this reoccurs. Then I tried it with stronger encryption. So at the top is the original file, and at the bottom is using AES. The option built in Microsoft or in Word 2003, there's an AES option. But even there, notice that there's some structure within the file, like this horizontal line, perhaps a region that you want to explore or find insight into. So the idea here then is there's this interplay. You can experiment with tools, try different things, see what's going on under the hood. And that takes me to what it's kind of a loose analog to chosen plain text attacks. So in chosen plain text, you're able to take some text that you've chosen, encrypt it, and take a look at the output and analyze that. That's loosely analogous to tools that create data files, particularly file formats you want to find out how they work. So that's what I did. So I took a TIFF file, and this is the upper left corner is the image. Then there's a byte plot down here. And notice you can see the actual gradients in there. Here is the strange attractor, attractor plot. And things that look like fireworks in the display, when it goes off, it looks like fireworks. That's usually an indication of an image. And then in the byte presence view in the lower right corner, you're seeing gradients there as well. What I did, though, is I loaded into Word. So that's what it looked like as a TIFF file. I loaded into Word, and I wanted to figure out how Word behaved. Well, when you load it into Word, it changed it. And when you load it in, save it, you can see that you chose something to put in, you're running it through Word, and then it's outputting something. So Word turned it into this, obviously, compressed region. And I confirmed that with the strange attractor view here. And then it still has the vertical bars that we saw earlier. And let's see. By checking one of those, I could see that it was converted to a PNG. The whole PNG header was embedded in the file. So you took a TIFF, now when you load a TIFF from a file in Word and you save it, it converts it, which might be of interest. Also, things, fixed length structures appear very obviously, and it allows you to see the start and end of these fixed length structures, as well as the size of the individual units. Again, things that would be kind of painful using a hex editor. So here's a Neverwinter Nights database file. And notice, I think you can see, there's a regular structure in there, and I've zoomed in. So you can see a repeating pattern. And once you've kind of got a feel for a repeating pattern, what the different regions look like, oftentimes that'll appear again and again in a file or even in a memory dump and other places. So once you kind of get a feel for the type of files you're working with, many of you are experts in different file formats. Once you know what they look like visually, you can scan right through and pick them out. Another example is the tvdebug.log. It's created by the Zone Alarm Firewall. This is a 6.7 meg file. And just, I tried to load it, thinking, it's a log file. Let me open it with Word, see what it looks like. Well, and it got garbage, so you know it's a binary file. Ran strings on it and got garbage there, too. So I just really wanted big picture context. What's in this file? How does it work? So even in this, apparently, it looks kind of random, but actually you can see diagonal lines. So there's some inherent structure. And by changing to that red-green-blue mode, you have the little slider at the bottom that can change the width. When you get it to 81 columns, remember there's 3 bytes per pixel, so that's about 240 bytes. Once you slide, everything snaps into alignment, and you're dealing probably with a 240-bit or byte-wide data structure. So when you see these vertical bands, all of a sudden you know a little bit more about the file. And you can also see deviations. When you see vertical band and then an odd pixel, that tells you something changed at that location. I also brought it up in the byte frequency view and in the attractor view. And remember I mentioned the XOR, the little boxes? Well, I noticed that exact same or very close signature here in the attractor view. And I didn't go any further, but I wonder, is XOR being used in some way in this file to mask printable ASCII? I don't know. And I also use the tag cloud view to show the range of values. So there's 90 values. So again, these are quick assessments. It takes a couple of minutes. Things would be very difficult to do otherwise. Variable length structures are possible as well, but a little more. We're not quite there yet, so I have examples from another tool. Oh, actually, I take that back. This is the thumbs.db file. You might be familiar with it in Windows. It contains thumbnail images that are created by the operating system when you put images in a given folder, and it creates a hidden file called thumbs.db. Well, it's interesting. I want to know, well, what does this actually look like on the inside? So you can open it and see that there's a header region, and then a compressed region, and a little apparent header region, another compressed region, and you can just see visually exactly what's going on in the file. I think that's useful when you're looking at unknown file formats or unfamiliar file formats. So just zooming in, you can see the regions, and you can open up different views and say, hey, this is, you could open up that attractor view, and you see a cloud, you know it's probably compressed. You see regions of structure, you could zoom in, and in this case I did, and lo and behold, in between the little thumbnails are the compressed regions, you see the header information, like file names. Again, this is one, this is fun. Two, it takes about 5 minutes, which is entirely, could be longer depending on what you're looking at. This is from the Roommate visualization tool, but I just wanted to plot it, so it's not from the Dangly Bytes program. But the idea is you can take binary data, and then if you know something about the length of the record, so a PCAP file, you know the length of each packet. So you can break on that and wrap. And that's what that tool does, and it takes into account packet length. And here's just an example of what that would look like in a variable length structure, and as well as color coding it by the protocol. And just you're not tied to a single color. The colors I chose for the tool were really arbitrary. I like that kind of green phosphorus old school look, so I went with it. But you can switch it to white background, black, grayscale, whatever you want. And then you're not constrained. You can also wrap multiple lines. So this takes down the side, and then when you hit the bottom, it wraps again and wraps again. So that might be of use as well. Okay. So let's look at a big file. So this is a 40 meg. Shut these. This is a 40 meg file. You know when a program crashes and Windows said, would you like to send something to Microsoft? Four files are created. There's a hdump file, which is basically, my understanding, is a dump of process memory. And then there's this kind of a smaller version. So I think just the smaller version is sent. This is the larger version. So you can bring up, hopefully, text view. You could bring up an RGB view. And you see, though, that we're dealing with process memory, so things are less structured. And that's kind of a problem. That's where we're going in the future with machine processing, because you want a machine to be able to help you hop from region to region. Sorry. But you can still see cool stuff and interesting things. So we'll just open the byte presence view. And then you can scroll through and see what you see. Okay. And when you see things like that, like here, the gradients, that tells you, I wonder what's going on. So it turns out that this was kind of the motivation behind creating the slider, that you can change the width. Hang on. So you can change the width of process memory. And this isn't just a phenomenon with there. So you can actually pull out the images out of process memory. So let's look at a couple more examples. So like I said, it can be fun. There's a conference called the Digital Forensics Research Conference. So they have an annual event, and there's like basically a 300 meg file of Linux process memory. And I tried the same technique there, and it worked. Out popped images. Slightly different, but still very legible. And again, that was the upper limit of what I tested on the tool, but it did seem to scale to that level. Okay, so I'm going to set this. So these are a couple of things I found. This is from my own browser. Even more interesting to look through someone else's browser. Okay, so 232. Okay, so you can see that this is, let's see if I can. So research, you never know exactly what you're going to find. And I added a little flip Hang on. I can get to it. Scroll is not happy. So I added flip because the images were inverted. So then you flip it and you see it's putty screenshots. And if my first thought is, oh my God, there's some sort of Trojan in Firefox. But and there was like a hidden putty hidden in there. You know, the forms were never displayed, but they're still in process memory. That was kind of what I was thinking. I probably just ended up visiting a website that had putty screenshots on it. But nonetheless, interesting to pull out. So let's look at another example. God, that's a tiny monitor. Okay, so you can see Wikipedia in there, and I'll do one more. Well, I have slides. I'll go back to the slides because this 1024 by 768 is killing me. So this was putty that you pulled out, Wikipedia, and this was a CD cover. And guess what day my browser crashed. So, and I think that's a value. I also think there's application, say in a redacted PDF or something like that, that putting a black square over something doesn't necessarily mean it's no longer there, as people have found out. So this was just basically looking inside a PDF, and lo and behold, there's images and things like that in there. I think that the idea of being able to pull images right out of memory is pretty interesting, but it's stored in different formats. I just have a list of examples up here. So you could run into the idea. I think you could extend that by allowing me to configure how it's. Right now, it's just plotting every 3 bytes to red, green, blue. And I think you could have it so you could tweak it a little bit more, like tuning the dials of television. Okay, so one of the problems with these bit views, byte views, and red, green, blue views is it's lossless information. So if you take that picture and you email it to somebody, you've just sent them the file. So they could extract out what's on the display without any loss at all. It's kind of like 8-bit per byte steganography or something like that. You really need a big monitor. 1024 by 768 really doesn't do justice. And right now I've tested up to 300 megs with basically a commodity PC, a nice big... it was with 1 gig of RAM. So if you had a nice maxed out machine, I think you could do a lot more. But it's still quite usable, I think, on a reasonable PC. It doesn't address Unicode, which has a whole level of complexity there, but I think it could. And the same thing, it doesn't address bit boundaries. So I'm assuming 8 bits per byte, but sometimes things slide across boundaries and everything isn't necessarily line up nicely on the 8s. So where could this go? I like the idea of a community effort, plugins and things like that. So as Eric and I are wandering around here in DEF CON, if you have a recommendation of a plugin architecture or something, we'd love to hear what you've got to say, where the ideas. this is something I'm looking for feedback from you on as well. Let's see if I can do it. This is all, it's still manual, right? So what I stubbed in was a memory map. The idea is, right now it just starts off with 0 is start of file, and then the length, the offset of the length was the end of file. But the analyst, the human, could add something, right? Like, I found at position 10,000, I found Google image or something like that. And then that inserts in the file. All right, so inserts it, and then when you double click, it takes you, it didn't show, but it jumps you to that location. So the idea is everything, in a perfect world, everything will be interconnected. Double click here, everything updates. Double click there, everything updates. That's where we're going. What I'd like to do is pre-populate this as this memory map with this is a compressed region, This is an encrypted region. This is text. This is repeating characters. So if there's a tool out there that already does that, like a memory map, you throw a large binary at it and it spits out kind of regions of interest in the file, I'd be very interested in hearing if it exists, because we're working on one now and I don't want to rediscover FHIR. I want to put a plug in for DAVX, which one of the big problems with visualization tools, particularly security visualization tools, is they can be tricky to install. So Jan Monch and Rafi Marty have put together a live CD distribution that includes a large number of tools, and what they did is the hard work of getting it all configured. So they're going to have a two-hour workshop on DAVX on Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m., at DEF CON. So is Jan still here? Yeah. So if you have questions, please talk to Jan on how to get a copy of the image or something like that. It'd be a lot more fun if you could actually experiment with it on the spot. Two communities I'd point you toward is secviz.org, run by Rafi Marty, who this is more, I'd say, in the like the applied real world kind of use case arena. And on the right-hand side is vizsec.org, and that's more the academic side of things. I recommend both if you're interested in learning more. And also, there's a workshop on this called vizsec, and it's going to be up at MIT/Cambridge in September, and you're very welcome to come up there and join us. And it's going to be a mix, and there's a panel from a number of Black Hat folks. Black Hat regulars are doing a panel up there to try and build bridges between the two communities. So you're welcome to come up, and that's vizsec.org. If you want more information, Eric and I have a paper on this subject that provides more details. It's not publicly available yet, but if you want a private preview copy, send us a note, and we'd be happy to send you a copy. And also, there's two books out there on the subject, a security data visualization from No Starch Press and Applied Security Visualization by Addison Wesley. Is Rafi here? Rafi is the proud author of Applied Security Visualization. It arrived just in time for Black Hat, so that's out there as well. Lots of people to thank. They gave it their time to make this a little bit better, and I thank them, or we thank them. Please give us your feedback on what you think. Happy to hear from you. We're going to be around for Black Hat and DEF CON, so please corner us. And one last plug. Dangly Bytes is available at roommit.org/db.zip. So if you want to pull down the latest copy, there's a copy on your CD, but the latest version is at roommit.org/db.zip. And then we'll have a VizBin link up shortly. And one last thing, Ken. Okay. So as a hobby, as another research project, we're looking at the evils of evil interfaces on the web, like advertisers are trying to make our lives miserable. And I have a survey. It's like one page, no names, circle some numbers. If you're kind enough to fill one out, we'd be internally indebted. And we have some free West Point swag for you for doing so. So with that, are there any questions? Yeah, please come to Mike.
Gentlemen, have you considered the possibility of malware that obscures visualization by appearing benign to evade triage?
Have we considered malware that obscures visualization? Are you talking like packers and things? Or are you talking tools that specifically attack visualization?
Any sort of malware that seems that it's benign, but it's really not. Have you considered the possibility of trying to counter that in your tool?
Not at this point. Well, I mean, right, this is new, so there's kind of this one-upmanship. Not at this point. I think there's value, like, say, people use packers to obfuscate contents of files and make reversing difficult. I think you could use this to maybe provide some input, and maybe if you did it in near real time or kind of regularly, you might see, are you getting more successful? Have you gone as far as you want as you're trying to work backwards? But we haven't looked at, you definitely could create things that would obscure these displays, but I'd argue that if you have many different displays, particularly if people come up with other ideas, you might mess up one or two or three, but the other things will still show through. So I think the strength is in numbers there. Okay. Okay. Thanks.
I just want to start by saying thank you. I'm very impressed by what I see up here. I see you have in visualization formats that account for 1 byte per pixel and 3 bytes per pixel. You said you've been having some trouble with Unicode. Have you considered just an RG view or something like that?
A what view? I'm sorry?
An RG, red and green, but no blue. Oh. That's why you get 2 bytes per pixel. It could help with Unicode. Oh. But you're going to get less information density.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's many variants. I mean, like, you're like tuning the dials here, and things will pop out. So the idea is trying to get the interface right. But absolutely, that's a great idea. That those different file formats, you know, the binary formats, oftentimes when you create these new views, things will pop out. So that'll work for Unicode, and I bet it'll work for some other interesting things, too. Cool. Thank you. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.